tuned to Yesterday, bringing you programs from radio's golden era. Mark Levone, you're your host for this hour of mystery. Later on, it's a broadcast of The Adventures of Ellery Queen from 1944. But first, it's The Adventures of Sam Spade with the story, The Report on Edith Hamilton. First heard on CBS on April 17, 1949. This is an Armed Forces Radio Service rebroadcast.
Dr. Ludwig Zoya, 1241 Leavenworth, San Francisco, from Samuel Spade, license number 137596. Subject, Edith Hamilton.
No capers?
No capers. Dear doctor, if I owe you an apology for not keeping you informed on the progress of the assignment and for letting it drag on as long as it has, then I'll have to go on owing you, which makes us even because you don't owe me anything. The start of it was a month ago. 32 days, 8 hours, 3 minutes, and 45 seconds, to be exact.
Ah, Mr. Spade.
Dr. Zoya.
Good to see you. Let me think. How long is it?
3 years since I visited your office. That was when you were my leading suspect in the Denov case.
Yes, poor Denov. It was he who pointed out that we psychoanalysts are not unlike you detectives. We probe, we question, we follow up clues in order to find out what is the dark secret which has nervously disturbed the human mind. But we are limited. We have only our patients' words and our interpretations. Sometimes that is not enough. And that is why I need your help in this particular case.
What case is that, Dr. Thorne?
Please do not interrupt the free flow of my thoughts.
Pardon me.
Naturally, my ego feels a certain resentment against my id for asking you for your help. What makes me think I need a detective?
Well, my id was just asking my ego the very same question.
Ah, you too feel resentment. We must analyze that later. Bring me your dream material.
Well,
now to the case.
Oh, yes.
This woman was referred to me by her physician. She has suffered a complete nervous collapse because she thought she recognized a certain person crossing a street. A person she had not seen for years.
Who was that?
My patient's son died under mysterious circumstances 3 years ago. And the woman she thought she saw was her daughter-in-law.
Mm-hmm.
It was widely reported in the newspapers at the time. Perhaps you remember it. Carter Hamilton.
Oh, Roanoke, Virginia, 1946. The mother accused the son's wife of murdering him. Daughter-in-law was hauled up before the grand jury, but not indicted. Dropped right out of sight afterwards.
Good you know that, Gay. Well, actually, my patient is suffering from an agonizing sense of guilt. Unconsciously, she thinks that she herself murdered her son.
Did she?
Well, there may be something tangible at the bottom of so profound a feeling of guilt.
You mean you want me to help you convince her that she really is guilty?
No. That is for me. But first, we must find out. What we must find out is somebody else, whether they are guilty.
What? Go all the way to Virginia, solve a crime that's been off the books for 3 years?
No. The daughter-in-law is actually here in San Francisco.
Well, if I remember right, she wasn't the only suspect.
Well, whether she is innocent or guilty is of no importance. It is only important that we know.
What?
Excuse me. Yes, Miss Case.
Mrs. Hamilton is here, Dr. Zoya.
Oh, good, Miss Case. Send her in. This is my case. I mean, my patient. I want you to meet her. Oh, good afternoon, Mrs. Hamilton.
Good afternoon, Doctor.
The woman who stood framed in the doorway was a tall, commanding figure. Impeccably dressed in black, with an easy $100,000 worth of black pearls wound around her neck and a black veil covering her face. She walked in ahead of you, displaying not a sign of nervousness, and stopped directly in front of me. Very deliberately, she lifted the veil, revealing a youthfully old face, deeply tanned and set off by snow-white hair. Only her enormous violet eyes showed any expression. She stared at me for what seemed like a full minute.
Yes, you do. You look like the other one.
Well, perhaps you had better explain, Mrs. Hamilton.
My daughter-in-law, Edith, was very much in love with another man before she married my son, Carter. He jilted her. Carter was second choice. It was I who talked her into marrying him. That's why I'll never rest until my son's death is avenged.
We must analyze this desire for vengeance.
Oh, yes. Yes, I had a dream last night. I dreamed that Edith was dead, stabbed with the same bone-handled hunting knife he used to kill my son.
Oh, yes. Well, no. You just lie down on the couch and relax, Mrs. Hamilton. I'll be with you in a moment. Come, Mr. Spade. This is the most disturbing new development, her dream.
You must get to that girl as soon as possible. Her life may be in danger.
You mean the old lady is mixed up enough to take a shot at her?
Yeah. Here is the address. And take this briefcase.
Why the briefcase?
Well, there are legal papers in it regarding the Hamilton estate. They require her signature. I had Mrs. Hamilton arrange for you to take them to her instead of the attorney.
Yeah, I'm supposed to pose as a lawyer. While I'm there, I'm supposed to shake a confession out of her. And while I'm typing it up, I'm a bodyguard. You're getting a lot for your money, Dr. Zoya. I spent the next hour or so in a newspaper morgue briefing myself on the old Hamilton case. The victim, Carter Hamilton, was the 28-year-old tail end of an old Virginia family whose blood was as rich as it was blue. The accounts of the killing were sketchy. At the old plantation, Carter Hamilton had been found one morning by his mother, dead and dead, of a stab wound. The knife was never turned up. Somebody had wiped everything in the room clean of fingerprints, which sounded like robbery until it was established that nothing was missing. The state was counting heavily on Mrs. Hamilton Sr.'s testimony in their case against the daughter-in-law, but an odd angle I'd forgotten. The old lady had clammed up in front of the grand jury, and the case was dropped for lack of evidence. Then there was a picture. She was the kind of a girl who looks her best in a riding outfit with her freckles showing, and then surprises you by looking even better in full makeup with her shoulders showing. Candid is the word that best describes her features. Large, widely spaced eyes, a generous mouth, and an expression of unaffected sincerity. It was with a certain reluctant eagerness that I kicked myself up Stockton Street to Pine, across Pine to Bush, and up three flights of stairs.
From the attorney. They wired me you were coming. Come in.
Thank you.
Not that I'm in hiding, but I'm curious as to how they got my address. Would you like a drink?
Well, not right now. Can I fix you one?
In about 20 minutes, maybe. I'm still wondering
how they located you? I think the elder Mrs. Hamilton saw you on the street.
Oh, is she here in San Francisco?
Yeah. Is that so surprising?
No, it's a large city. What is surprising is her staying on after learning that I was in town.
She's not very well. In fact, I think she's had some kind of a nervous breakdown.
I'm sorry to hear that. I'm very fond of her, you know, in spite of everything.
No, I didn't know. Maybe I should explain. I'm a private detective local. I was hired here in San Francisco to bring these papers to you.
Oh, you found me.
You seem to be a little slow introducing myself. I'm sorry. Sam Spade.
Well, if it had to be a detective, I'm glad it's you. But I can't help wondering why they didn't send a lawyer.
Lawyers cost $50 an hour. I only cost $10.
Oh. In the private eye stories, it's always $25 a day and expenses.
I wish those writers would get abreast of the time.
I'm sure they'll catch up. But if you're being paid by the hour, perhaps I can keep you here a little longer.
I'm glad you said that.
You remind me of someone.
Pleasantly, I hope.
Yes. Oh, yes. And sadly, too.
Your husband?
If you don't know about that, I hope you'll never find out.
I'll leave that up to you.
His hair was like yours. He was thinner. And his eyes were blue. Maybe we shouldn't wait till 5 o'clock for that drink.
It was a funny kind of a drink. I'd never been hit by one before, black velvet. After two of them, I even began to hate myself a little less. And after the third, I decided there was some mystical connection between the drink and the color of her eyes, black velvet. I don't know much about music, but the way she went at the piano, you knew she wasn't afraid of it, and probably wasn't afraid of anything. The pieces she played were like her, bold and at the same time delicate. Simple, but with a web of complexities in the background. Brilliant, but always colored with sadness. What's the matter?
I want you to take me someplace.
Where?
Any place. Dinner. I don't care. I just want to go someplace with you. With you.
Hey.
What is it, Sam?
I thought we were going out. I never paid much attention to San Francisco before I met her. It's quite a place. There's a little park up on Russian Hill where you can stand and look out over the houses of the marina to the Golden Gate. There's an island in San Francisco even worse than Alcatraz. It's in the middle of the lake at Flyshacker Zoo, and instead of gorillas, the population is nothing but monkeys. There are only two laundries in Chinatown. And out at Golden Gate Park, they have a band concert every Sunday afternoon. Maybe it was just the bright weather, but everything looked clean and shiny, as if somebody had taken a scrubbing brush to all the buildings. We even fed seagulls. At first, she never went any further into her past than the day before yesterday. I couldn't very well charge her for the progress I was not making on the case, so when I learned that she'd sent old Mrs. H. to a nursing home for a 2-week rest and Edith did not need bodyguarding for the time being, I took a job that took me down to Los Angeles for a few days. I was awful glad to get back, and not because I don't like L.A.
Darling, you were gone so long.
Hey, the posies.
Oh, give them to me.
Well, I like that. This is the last time I make a fool out of myself buying flowers.
I'll love them later.
Hey, you're trembling. What happened while I was gone?
What happened to me happened before you went away. You know that. Sam, while you were gone, I had a lot of time and I did a lot of thinking. And I came to a very important decision. There was something I knew I had to tell you. And I wasn't so sure I could get through it.
Now, look, Angel, it sounds serious. I don't think this is the time.
Oh, but it is. Yes, it is. Here, take it before I change my mind.
What is it?
I wrote it all down. Sit here, facing away from the piano. And don't say anything until you've read it through.
Oh, okay. The opening sentence hit me straight between the eyes. It said, I, Edith Hamilton, of my own free will, make the following confession. It was addressed to the district attorney of Roanoke, Virginia.
Sam! Sam!
And that, Dr. Zoya, was when I headed back to your office. Not to have my head examined, it was too late for that, but to tell you that I was resigning, Miss Caper. On the way, I placed two ads in the classified sections of three papers. One under office space for rent and one under situations wanted. Ex-private detective desires position as night watchman, prison guard, asylum attendant, or any more pleasant line of work. And I really meant it.
The United States Armed Forces Radio Service is presenting the weekly adventure of Dashiell Hammett's famous private detective, Sam Spade.
Mr. Spade, what is it? You're disturbed.
Disturbed is not the word, Mr. Zoya.
Is it because you've been with her a week and a half and there's yet no progress? Let us analyze the situation.
The whole setup has been rotten from the beginning. You send me to that girl under false pretenses. You tell me to worm my way into her confidence.
Now, one moment. Did I tell you this?
How else did you expect me to get a confession out of her? Should have got the play when that old lady said I looked like a man Edith was once in love with. You thought she'd fall for me, didn't you? You thought I'd take advantage of it, didn't you? Well, you could hire somebody else to make love to her. I'm a detective, not a gigolo.
So she did make a confession to you.
Why do you say that?
When a patient comes to a psychoanalyst for help, a situation develops which we call transference. Now, this means that the doctor represents to the patient someone in whom he can confide, to whom he can unburden himself, such as a parent or a loved one.
Well, then let's
not
go on with it.
No. Well, at the moment, that is, what you feel toward me at the moment is what we call negative transference. You wish to continue to make love to her, but you feel guilty about it, so you blame me.
Well, what then? What are you driving at?
In this love affair of yours, we have a similar situation. But what she feels for you only resembles love. It is transference. You resemble a former lover.
Yeah.
And that is why it only took a week and a half for her to reveal everything. Oh, sometimes I think I am too ethical or too old. Come now, why don't you tell me? You'll feel better.
There's nothing to tell. She had it written down. I didn't read past the word confession.
Well, what did you do with it?
I destroyed it.
I see. Well,
now
what? Miss Case, what is it?
Mrs. Hamilton, she's...
It was Mrs. Hamilton, all right. But she didn't look much like the dignified old lady I had met in your office 10 days before. Her high-piled white hair was hanging in two ratty pigtails. She was wearing a nurse's cape over a flannel hospital nightgown, and in her hand was a .32-caliber gun.
Mrs. Hamilton, why did you leave the nursing home?
You lied to me, Dr. Sawyer. That place is nothing but an asylum.
Well, you know that isn't true. Come, give me the gun. You're tired. You must rest.
Yes. Now I can rest. I've killed her.
What? Well, Miss Casey, she's fainted. Get some water.
Let me see that gun. I'm going to Edith's place. Get an ambulance over there and don't stop to analyze anything. Edith was slumped forward over the piano keyboard. She was barely breathing. The old lady wasn't much of a hand with a gun. Four of the slugs had punctured the big studio window. One had torn a flesh wound in the shoulder. The other had penetrated the right side, just below the rib cage, and there was not much bleeding at the wound of exit. Her face was pale and the skin cold to the touch. I gambled on a hunch she was suffering mainly from shock, moved her over to a couch, threw a blanket over, and poured hot coffee into her. After a bit, her color started coming back. Then she opened her eyes.
Oh, I thought you went away. I must have dreamed it.
Lie still, Angel. Don't try to talk.
Oh, let the... Please. Please. Don't let them know what happened. Don't...
Take it easy. It's only the ambulance.
Oh, I've got to save Mother Hamilton. You see, he's got to get rid of that knife and the... Hadley.
I rode in the ambulance with her. She was still unconscious when they carried her into surgery. They told me she was out of danger. When they threw me out that night, I went back to her apartment. What she'd said about saving old Mrs. Hamilton and getting rid of the knife gave me a new slant on that confession I hadn't read. The pieces were still on the floor where I'd thrown them. It took me nearly an hour to put the jigsaw together. And when I did, it was still a puzzle. In her story of that morning 3 years ago, she confessed to finding the body before the official discovery, to hiding the knife and wiping the doorknobs and surfaces in the death room to get rid of fingerprints. She couldn't remember anything that had happened in the 8 hours between 1 a.m. when she had left her husband drinking in the library and gone upstairs to bed, and approximately 9 in the a.m. when she found herself standing over his body with a knife in her hand. I stretched out on the sofa to think it over, and then I drew a blank.
Spade. Mr. Spade, wake up.
What? How did you get in here?
Well, I've been reading that so-called confession. Very interesting. We must analyze it.
You analyze it. I'm going to call the hospital.
I've just come from there.
How is she?
Physically, nothing serious. Mentally, she's not so good. She keeps asking for you.
Yeah?
She thinks you can help her. It's definitely there, the delusion that she's in love with you.
What makes you so sure it's a delusion? Don't answer that. When can I see her?
Well, it's best that you wait until she comes home. That will be next Tuesday.
Look, you're supposed to be a first-class head doctor. Can't you cure this amnesia of Edith?
I thought I explained to you last night when we were discussing transference.
Please, Dr. Zoya, please. I know you mean well, but don't. I beg of you.
Well, it's not important. When she gets to know you better, she will realize that her love for you is irrational. And then she will remember everything.
I kept myself busy like crazy until Edith checked out of the hospital. There wasn't much talk between us at first. Even her music was reticent, little rambling improvisations that sounded like children's songs or lullabies with something just a little acid mixed with their simplicity. Then as the days went by and her strength and confidence started to return, her music became serene and graceful. It became like her as she sat there at the piano in front of the big window with its afternoon sun streaming down on the San Francisco hilltops, while at the same time the April fog bank started its nightly prowl in through the Golden Gate. And that was like her, too, and like her music. Brilliant, but with a touch of melancholy. And then one day it was all warmth and brilliance, and she was smiling. Yeah, Angel.
I remember now.
So that's it.
I woke up this morning feeling so happy. And then I knew I was on the verge of it. Because I knew that however bad the truth might be, it was worth not remembering. Even if I was a murderer, you'd rather know, wouldn't you?
No, I wouldn't.
Why? I thought I knew you so well.
Well,
Darling, are you angry?
Yeah.
But at me?
Yes, you. The first time I came here, I tried to give you a fair warning. You should have figured the score when I told you I was a private detective. You'd even read the stories where in the end the detective doesn't have any choice but to turn in the beautiful dame, no matter what his personal feelings are. Maybe you didn't think they were true to life, or maybe you thought I was an exception to the rule because you are. Well, I'm not. Truth is, I was hired to get a confession out of you any way I could, and I think in the back of your mind you've known it all along. You want to have your confession and eat it, too. You probably learned as a child that it's smarter to tell all and be patted on the back than to be found out and get spanked.
How can you be so smug and so self-satisfied and so... Whatever made me think I was in love with you? Just because you looked a little like someone who I...
Zoya was right. Only he thought you were kidding yourself, too. Zoya called it transference. I call it baloney. Goodbye.
You come back here. You can't just leave like...
And that, Dr. Zoya, is why I never heard her confession. It turned into a lover's quarrel. But I understand she paid $25 an hour to rattle it off to you. I have before me your telephonic message. I haven't had time to analyze it, but at first glance, I take it to mean that Edith was innocent of everything except destroying evidence. Motive, to spare her mother-in-law the anguish of knowing that her son was a suicide. I'm sorry, now that I know what her story was, that I didn't stay to hear her tell it. But that, as you would say, is not important. At least I cured her of that love delusion you were so worried about, even though it took a month to do it. Period, and a report.
Oh, Sam, sacrificing yourself so self-sacrificingly, rather than shatter a mother's delusion.
Yeah, some other time, huh?
I'm sorry, Sam. I'll go tight this time. Well, here it is, Sam. Sam, where did you go? Sam Spade Detective Agency.
It's me, sweetheart.
Sam, where did you go?
I'm downstairs in the bar.
Well, Sam, there's so much noise on the line, I can't...
I'm drowning my sorrows.
Well, you don't need to shout. Oh, hold the line a minute. Yes? May I help you?
Oh, no, I'm sorry. I was hoping I might find Mrs. Spaden.
Hello?
Would you like to leave a message?
Oh, tell him Edith Hamilton called.
Oh. Ooh!
Jeff, are you still on the phone?
Ooh. Oh, pardon me. Yes, dear?
What happened? Are you taking a bath?
Nothing at all. One moment, please. Miss Hamilton, I have him on the line. He's downstairs in the bar. And if you'll hurry, you can just catch him, I'm sure.
Oh, downstairs. Well, I will hurry. Thank you.
You're welcome. Sam, are you still on the line?
What's the matter with you?
Nothing. Just go ahead and drown your sorrows. But don't get loaded. Good night, Sam.
Well, good night, sweetheart.
I'm going to take piano lessons.
The Adventures of Sam Spade, Dashiell Hammett's famous private detective, are produced and directed by William Spear. Sam Spade is played by Howard Dove, but Tuttle is Effie. This is the United States Armed Forces Radio Service, the voice of information and education.
The Adventures of Sam Spade, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 17th of April, 1949, first heard on CBS. This is an hour of mystery on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Coming up next, The Adventures of Ellery Queen from January 20th, 1944, using a script that was heard about 4 years earlier on January 7th, 1940, called The Scarecrow and the Snowman. Part of the series was to bring in well-known celebrities to be armchair detectives to try to guess the solution of the case. Among this episode's guests are star Gene Cagney, sister of Jimmy, whose last film before this appearance was the very famous Yankee Doodle Dandy, where she starred alongside her brother in the story of George M. Cohan. In terms of radio, the appearance before this on Ellery Queen was in an adaptation of Yankee Doodle Dandy on the Lady Esther Screen Guild Theater. Now she plays guest armchair detective on The Adventures of Ellery Queen.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Promo Seltzer Special. Bringing you radio's most thrilling mystery drama, The Adventures of Ellery Queen.
Oh,
makers of Bromo Seltzer bring you another thrilling adventure with Ellery Queen, the celebrated gentleman detective, in person. Ellery Queen invites you to match wits with him as he relates another story of a crime he alone unravels. Before revealing the solution, he stops the play, gives you a chance to solve the mystery. Our guest armchair detectives for this evening are film star Miss Jean Cagney and Mr. Peter Cusack, Executive Secretary of the National Foundation for Infantile Paralysis. And now, Ellery Queen, Master Detective and your host for the next half hour.
Thank you, Ernest Chappell, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Tonight, I'm going to tell you about the exotic adventure of the Scarecrow and the Snowman. One July morning, some years before the war, Dad, Nicky, Sergeant Veeley, and I were driving to the rich farm country of the Midwest. Suddenly, we rounded a curve and saw a red barn and a big clabbered farmhouse shaded by elm trees. Sergeant, stop.
What farm, Maestro? We're in the middle of no place.
I want to take color movies of this farm.
Huh? You and your movie camera, Ellen.
Try a shot of that scarecrow over there in the cornfield, son.
Oh, swell, Dad.
So that's a scarecrow. What do you know?
Get that farm in the picture, son.
There, Ellery, see? Walking toward the scarecrow.
Yes, very nice.
Help! Wait a minute. Something's wrong.
Yeah.
What's he yelling at us?
Yelling for help, Nicky.
Oh. Come on, let's get over there. Hey, farmer. What's the matter?
What's wrong?
Why, he's the color of death.
It's bleeding. It's bleeding.
What's bleeding?
Scarecrow.
What? The scarecrow? It is bleeding.
Them rags. That's Straw Kitty. That's our regular scarecrow.
And how could a scarecrow bleed?
Because it's not a scarecrow, you clerk.
It's a man dressed in the scarecrow's duds.
Let's get him off this pole.
Right.
Okay. I got
him. He's been tied to the stake by his belt.
But how the old five tarnation did he get here?
Don't you know? Easy now. That's it, Dad.
Badly wounded, Ellery. Unconscious. Hey, you, farmer. What's this farm? Who are you?
This is the Mayfield place. I'm Josh Bullen. I run the place for old man Mayfield.
Where's the nearest doctor, Mr. Bullen?
Dairyville Hospital, 6-7 miles from here.
We'll have to rush him there. Come on, Dad. It's going to be a race with death.
That country doctor's certainly taking his time in there. Just how was the man hurt, Inspector?
Stabbed twice in the chest, Nicky.
I wonder who he is. Not an identifying mark on him.
Yes, quite a mystery. Mr. Bullen.
Yes, Mr. Quinn.
Who lives on the Mayfield farm besides yourself?
Well, now, there's me and my wife, Josie Mayfield. We've been married 4 years now, and Josie's pa, old man Mayfield. It's really his place, but I run it for him.
Don't tell me there's no Ma Mayfield, Mr. Bullen.
Sure is, Miss Porter. Josie's ma, my mother-in-law. Wonderful woman. Cooks, keeps house, helps out in the fields. Strong as a plowmare, Ma Mayfield is. I sort of wish Josie took after her ma.
Your wife, Mr. Bullen? What's wrong with her?
Josie's been sickly, Mr. Queen. Ever since our baby died. Stays abed most times. Ain't got the strength to crawl downstairs nearly. Oh, say, here's Doc Jenkins.
How's your patient?
Will he pull through, Dr. Jenkins?
Yes, he will. Must be made of iron.
I'd like to talk to him, Doctor.
Can't now, Mr. Queen. He's unconscious. Say, Josh, who is he, do you know?
I'm darned if I do, Doc. Never seen him before.
Me neither. Thought he knew everyone in the county, too.
Doctor, I'd like to photograph your patient.
I know it.
Take his picture? Well, I imagine you'll have to get the sheriff's permission.
But it's attempted murder.
Henry, take your photo.
And, Doctor, no one's to see or talk to the victim till we can question him.
All right.
Please notify us at the local hotel the moment he regains consciousness.
Yeah.
Ellery has photographed the mysterious scarecrow man and had the photo developed. Now, several hours later, the Queens are driving Josh Bullen back to the Mayfield farm.
Henry, think someone in the Mayfield place carved that fellow up?
I don't know, Dad. Keep your eyes open.
Well, here we are.
Whew. Isn't it hot?
Man, what I'd give for a sight of a bear.
Beer? I'll get Ma Mayfield to fix you the finest drink of ginger beer you ever tasted.
Stop fighting me!
Who's that crazy-looking old man on the porch?
What's he waving that shotgun at us for?
It's all right, Pa. I know these folks.
Don't get scared. That's just my father-in-law.
Mr. Mayfield, if you'll put that shotgun down...
I know you, Jonathan, minister. I clapped eyes on you. Stand where you be.
Pa, this ain't Jonathan. It's Mr. Queen.
He's still Jonathan, Josh. You, boy, make tracks for a funky day.
Hey, the old squirrel ain't kidding.
You won't get it, eh?
He's going to shoot.
Henry, duck.
Come on. Get behind the car, all of you.
All right, I warned you.
He's shooting.
What's the matter with him?
For heaven's sake, Mr. Bullen, who does he think I am? Who's Jonathan?
My wife's brother. Old man Mayfield's son.
Ma! Who's the shooting?
land of mercy, Paul, you give me that gun.
Yeah, Ma, I'm going to shoot Jonathan Gage.
You are going to march up to the attic to your room, Paul Mayfield.
No, I'm not. I'm
going to shoot on the land. Say, the old lady's okay. See the way she took that gun away from the old bazook?
Sorry as all get out, folks. You see, Jonathan Mayfield got into a heap of trouble, and his pa said he'd kill him if he ever showed his face around the farm again. Old man's out of his head.
Why don't you put him away, Bullen?
Ma won't hear of it, Inspector. Besides, Pa's quiet most times. Come on into the house. Ma, that you?
Yeah, Josh. Well, Pa's all right now. Come in, come on in.
Thank you, ma'am.
Ma, these folks are fretting for some of your extra special ginger beer.
Josh, you take him into the parlor, and I'll be right in with a big pitcher. Just make yourselves right to home, folks.
Now, this way, folks.
Thank you.
Why, Josie.
Josh? Oh, hello.
Downstairs, Josie? Sitting in the parlor all by yourself. Folks, this is my wife, Josie Mayfield Bullen.
I am, Mrs. Bullen.
Oh, I'm so glad. It's so very nice having you.
Well, sit down, folks.
Yeah, thanks.
Yes, you will. My, Josie talks mighty fine, eh? Had 2 years of state college, Josie did.
This girl is so pretty. Are you married?
Why, no, I'm not.
I am. I had a baby once. It was the cutest baby. She had blue eyes and the softest blonde hair.
Now, Josie, you know we don't talk about the baby.
Ma, where's that ginger beer?
Come in, Josh, come in. Well, what's everybody so quiet for? Josie, have you been talking about the baby again?
It was a girl, Mom. Remember? Oh, the sweetest little girl.
This place gives me the jeepers, Inspector. Not old, not this girl here.
Henry, show him that photo and let's beat
it. Come on, folks, now. Come on, try some of this.
Oh, just thank you, Brother Mayfield. Hey, oh, by the way, do you recognize the man in this photograph?
This fella?
Mm-hmm.
Nope, can't say as I do. Josie, drink?
No, thanks, Mom. I was going to name my baby Mary Ellen, you know.
Ellery, please. Let's go.
We're talking photos now. Here's one of Jonathan, Josie's brother.
Josh, you put that album away.
Please, may I see it, Mr. Bullen?
Sure.
Dad, come over here.
Here, miss. Can I give you some ginger beer?
It's not the wounded man, Dad.
Nope. No resemblance to the stranger at all. What do you say we go?
No, Dad. We're staying in Derryville till I find out who that scarecrow man is and who tried to murder him.
Finally, 3 days later, Dr. Jenkins said we could question the stranger. But when we went to the man's room at the hospital, we found that he'd escaped through a window. It was Ellery hopping. The scarecrow man gone, and we still didn't know who he was or who had tried to murder him.
Well, we hung around trying to find someone who recognized the scarecrow man from Ellery's picture of him, but no one knew him, so we gave up. 6 months later, January it was, we got a letter from the Derryville Justice of the Peace, an old fellow named Clem Hunter. Hunter confessed that he'd lied about not recognizing the stranger and he wanted to clear his conscience. He wrote us, "You certainly won't find it out from anybody else, because me and the town clerk, who's dead, were the only ones who knew who this fellow was. If you'll come see me, I'll tell you the whole story."
But 2 days before we got back to Derryville, old Clem Hunter up and kicked the bucket. Pneumonia. Boy, you should have seen the maestro. Our last hope of solving the mystery 6 feet under. But the maestro says, "Now that we're here, I'm not going back to New York without taking another whack at the Mayfields." Well, we drive over to the Mayfield farm in practically a blizzard. The roads were so bad, Ma Mayfield makes us stay overnight.
Late that same afternoon, the storm subsided a bit, and Ellery and I went outside to find Josh Bullen hammering away at a thick pole driven into the frozen earth right off the porch.
Hi, Mr. Bullen. What are you doing?
Making a snowman, Mr. Queen.
A snowman?
That's steady enough, I reckon. Now to pack more snow around
it. Oh, may I help, Mr. Bullen?
Sure thing, Miss Porter. Pitch right in.
Oh, by George, that looked like fun. Move over, Nicky.
Now, hurry, I asked first.
Seeing this pole, Josh, stuck in the ground this way...
Sort of reminds you of the fellow we found hanging in the cornfield last summer, don't it?
Yes. Ever hear anything more about him after he escaped from the Dairyville Hospital, Josh?
Nary word. Say, this has come along fine. You make his head, Miss Porter.
Oh, fine.
Hope Josie likes him. She's watching from her bedroom window up there.
Hi, Josie! Like it, Mrs. B?
Oh, Josh, he's lovely.
Well, wait, he ain't finished. He still needs eyes, nose, and a mouth.
And a pipe, Josh. Stick a pipe in his mouth. Oh, how my baby would have loved him.
Baby? She's still...
Don't pay no mind, folks.
Sure, Josie, pipe it is.
Yes, who ever heard of a snowman without a pipe?
A corn cob, Josh.
Yeah, gotta have a corn cob. Oh, blame it, I left my cob up in my bedroom this morning. Of course, Pa Mayfield's got a raft of them. Keeps all his cobs up in that attic room of his. But I guess we better not bother Pa. Might start shooting at you for Jonathan again, eh, Mr. Queen?
Yeah.
Oh, but gee, here's that other corn cob of mine right here in my jeans. Forgot all about the second one.
There's Josie. How's he look?
Oh, he's a beautiful snowman with that pipe,
Josh. Oh, hi, Inspector and Sergeant. Look at this.
Hey, that's some production.
A snowman. Where's the maestro?
Oh, he was right here a second ago.
Here I am, Nicky.
Oh.
Him and his movie camera.
Yes, Sergeant. I remembered he was in the car.
Going to take movies of this snowman, son?
Dad, you're a mind reader.
Somebody's at the door of this iceberg they call a bedroom.
Climb it a bit, son. See who it is.
Oh, it must be 10 below 0 in here. Yes, who is it?
Frank. It's me.
Oh, Nicky crying. It's me. Oh, wait, Nicky. This floor. Coming.
I just saw it.
Saw what, Nicky?
Annie. What are you crying?
I couldn't sleep. I got up and looked out my bedroom window at the snowman in the front yard and...
Nicky, oh, what did you see?
The snowman. He's bleeding.
That's noise, baby. You want to wake the others?
Okay, Inspector.
There, you see?
A red brown stain all over the snowman's chest. Tell me, what in thunderation do you think you're doing?
Photographing the snowman, Dad. Lucky this moonlight's so bright. Now, let's have a look.
Oh, if that ain't blood, real blood, I'll turn in my badge.
Somebody's idea of a joke.
Nicky, go back to bed.
Oh, no.
Go on, Nicky.
All right, Inspector.
Joke, huh? Some joke.
Maestro, it's a dead man under this snowman.
I thought so. Strapped to the pole by his belt?
Yeah, just like that scarecrow guy last summer.
Two ugly stab wounds in his chest, son.
Brush the snow off him around his head, Sergeant.
Yeah.
Lord.
It's the same guy.
The man who escaped from the Dairyville Hospital.
The Scarecrow Man.
Why isn't Bailey back? He'll freeze as hard as this corpse in the front yard is. Again, all identification marks gone, drat it.
How long do you figure he's been dead?
Well, I'd say since late last night, son.
Yes, about the time the snow stopped. We slept through the whole thing.
Bailey.
Yeah, Inspector?
Mushing from Nome? Well, what'd you find out? Where's the single set of tracks leading up to the snowman come from?
The Mayfield barn, Inspector. Blood in there. Signs of a fight.
Murdered in the barn, huh? And the killer carried the dead man to this spot, knocked down Josh Bullen's snowman, slung the corpse to the pole with his own belt, and rebuilt a snowman around it.
Why do you suppose he did that now, Maestro?
To delay discovery of the crime, Sergeant. The killer was afraid of us. By the time the snow melted, we'd long since have left the neighborhood.
It'd have worked, too, if the dead man's blood hadn't soaked through the snow. Really, was there any clue in the barn to the killer?
I looked my eyes out, Inspector. No dice.
And these tracks don't tell us anything. Killer wore huge galoshes. Could have been anyone's.
But aren't there any other tracks, really, to show where the killer came from or which way he went?
Nary a track. Anywhere's on the Mayfield property.
Dad, that means the victim came to the barn during the snowstorm, as did his murderer. Then more snow fell and wiped out all the tracks they'd made.
So by the time the killer lugged his victim's body from the barn to the front yard here, all he left was this one set of tracks.
Hey, wait. Then where are the killer's tracks escaping from the yard here after he put the body in the snowman? There ain't no escaping track.
Sergeant, you've hit it. The only place the killer could have escaped to without leaving further tracks in the snow is up onto the porch of the Mayfield farmhouse here.
Say, yeah. He could have made it from the snowman to the porch in one big step.
But Henry, that means the killer is one of the people in this farmhouse.
Yes, Dad. At last we know the stranger was murdered by one of the Mayfield tribe. So let's wake him up and find out which one.
Well, we went to work on the Mayfields. Might just as well have saved our breath. They all claimed they didn't know a thing about the corpse and the snowman. So we turned the whole mess over to the local sheriff and headed for home. I don't like to remember Ellery the next few weeks. Hear it, Emma. Snap your head off for a look. Haul out his reels of movie film that he'd shot on our two trips to Dairyville and run them over and over. But anyway, one night, he was showing his shots of the bloodstained snowman when...
Nicky, stop the machine. Sergeant, put the lights on.
Yeah.
Why the excitement, son?
Now, what cooks?
Now I know who killed that man.
You know who killed him? But, Maestro, we don't even know who he was.
You mean the victim?
Yeah.
I've known that for some time.
What?
You have?
Not his name, of course. But it wasn't the victim's identity which held me up. It was his killer's identity.
And now you know that, too? But how can you, Ellery? All you've done is run the snowman movie.
They're what told me, Nicky. Didn't you notice a difference between the Josh Bullen snowman and the snowman the killer built around the corpse?
No.
The snow at the base of the killer's snowman had been shoveled up. Don't you see? After concealing the body inside the snowman, the killer then began poking in the snow at its feet with a shovel.
He'd lost something in the snow and was looking for it.
But what, Ellery?
My films even answer that. There's an object in the shots of the original snowman that's missing from the shots of the made-over snowman.
Something missing? What, Maestro?
Josh Bullen's corncob pipe.
Hey, that's right. When we found the made-over snowman with the corpse inside, the pipe wasn't there.
Exactly. The killer dropped the pipe accidentally and shoveled frantically around trying to find it. He never did find it. Otherwise, he'd have stuck it back in the snowman's mouth.
Yeah, so we'd think it was still the same snowman and not get suspicious and find the body.
That's all very well, Mr. Queen. But what's the missing corn cob got to do with the killer of the stranger?
The missing corn cob, Nicky, tells me who the killer was. Well, ladies and gentlemen, there you have the mystery of the Scarecrow and the Snowman. Have you puzzled it out yet? Well, let's compare solutions with our guest armchair detective. Nicky, will you introduce our guest, please?
Well, Ellery, our first guest tonight is Miss Jean Cagney, the famous screen star and sister of Jimmy Cagney. Our second guest is Mr. Peter Cusack, executive secretary of the National Foundation for Infantile Paralysis. All right, Ellery.
Thank you, Nicky. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to take a moment here to remind you that the March of Dimes to fight infantile paralysis is on right now. Won't you help protect America's children from this dread disease by sending your dimes and dollars, as much as you can afford, to President Roosevelt, Washington, D.C.? Thank you. And now, Miss Cagney, who is the murderer?
I'd say it was Ma Mayfield.
Have you any reason?
Well, I would suspect that Ma Mayfield wouldn't have a second pipe on hand.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I think she'd be strong enough to be able to commit the crime and to reconstruct the snowman.
Thank you, Miss Cagney. And Mr. Cusack, who do you think the murderer is?
I think the murderer was Josh Mayfield, Ellery.
Well, why do you think that?
I don't know what his motive was, but the clue of the missing corncob pipe makes me feel that it was he, because he referred to the fact that Pa Mayfield had this collection, and Bob Mayfield being very fussy and irritable, I would think that Josh would not want to lose the pipe.
You mean Josh Bullen, the husband of Josie Mayfield?
Excuse me.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Cusack and Miss Cagney. We'll let you know in just a moment whether you've hit the solution to our mystery. But first, here's Ernest Chappell, who can't seem to get his mind off sabotage.
And it is sabotage when a common sick headache makes you lose out on work or pleasure. You can't do a first-class job or enjoy your fun when you've got pounding head pains, plus the upset stomach and jittery nerves that may accompany a common sick headache. And that's why I say the next time you're feeling miserable with a headache, step up to the nearest drugstore fountain and ask for a Bromo Seltzer. Now, 10 cents is all it costs to try Bromo Seltzer. And once you experience the quick, effective relief it gives, you'll want to get a bottle for your home medicine chest.
Dad, you know who that dead stranger was?
Well, Dad, remember your mentioning that we got a letter from the Derryville Justice of the Peace?
Sam Hunter, who wrote saying that he knew who this stranger was?
Yes. Now, what could a Justice of the Peace and a town clerk know that other members of a rural community might not know? Well, what do we usually associate with Justices of the Peace?
Marriages. He performs.
Yes. And marriages also involve a town clerk, who probably issues a license and certainly records the marriage in the town rolls.
So you figured the stranger had been married in Derryville years before.
Right. But who else would know of the stranger's marriage? Only the Mayfields, because the killer is one of them. So we must ask, what woman at the Mayfield farm was of marriageable age? Only one. Josie, the daughter.
Josie's married to Josh Bullen.
Conclusion, Josie and the stranger had been married before Josie's marriage to Josh Bullen. A secret marriage. Because no one in Derryville was able to recognize the stranger from that photo I took of him at the hospital last summer. So it was reasonable to conclude that one of the Mayfield tribe had killed the stranger to keep his secret marriage to Josie from becoming public knowledge.
Josie and the stranger elope or something. Old man Mayfield finds out and either drives the man away or buys him off. Must have been something pretty raw about the man that the Mayfields couldn't stomach.
So when they thought Josie's husband would never turn up again, Josie never bothered to get a divorce.
Then when Josie married Josh Bullen, she committed bigamy.
Yes. Well, the husband did turn up again, last July, probably with demands for more money which the Mayfields couldn't or wouldn't meet. So one of the family stabbed him early that Sunday morning and hid the body in the cornfield scarecrow till it could be disposed of permanently at nightfall. But we came along during the day, found the stranger still alive, took him to the hospital, and he escaped. The one who knew Josie's bigamous secret was loose again.
Then why did he come back in January?
We'll never know exactly, Sergeant. Anyway, the same Mayfield murdered him for keeps this time and hid the body in the snowman so that we'd fail to discover the crime and leave.
But who is the killer, son? How do you know?
The missing corn cob pipe tells me, Dad.
The corn cob pipe?
We know the killer wanted a corn cob and hadn't located the one he'd lost in the deep snow. Because if he had found it, he'd have stuck it back in the snowman's mouth. And he didn't. That fact clears Josh Bullen and old Pa Mayfield.
Clears Bullen and his father-in-law? How so, son?
Because either man could easily have got another corn cob to stick into the snowman's mouth, Dad.
How do you figure that out, Ellen?
Well, we know that Josh Bullen had a second corn cob up in his bedroom. And we also know that Pa Mayfield kept his corn cobs in his attic room. Either man could have procured a corn cob to replace the lost one merely by stealing up to his own room in the middle of the night while the rest of us were asleep. Since the killer didn't replace the lost pipe, it means he didn't have one to replace it with and couldn't get another from his own room.
But, Maestro, that leaves only...
the two women of the house.
Precisely. Could the murderer have been Josie, Josh's wife? No. It was a man-sized job to carry the dead body from the barn to the front yard, demolish the original snowman, tie the corpse to the pole, and build a new snowman around it. Josie is an invalid, bedridden most of the time, so Josie couldn't possibly have done it.
The old lady...
Yes, Sergeant. Ma Mayfield. Did Ma Mayfield have the strength to commit both these strenuous crimes? Oh, yes. Josh told us she even helped with the farming. In fact, Josh said she was as strong as a plowmare. Yes, Ma Mayfield killed her daughter's husband to protect Josie's reputation in that rural community and save what was left of the poor girl's life. Ladies and gentlemen, you have the solution to the mystery.
I want to thank Miss Cagney and Mr. Cusack for appearing as guest armchair detectives this evening. We want especially to compliment Miss Cagney on her skill in solving the crime. We have for both Miss Cagney and Mr. Cusack a personal gift from Bromo Seltzer, also an autographed copy of my latest mystery anthology, The Female of the Species, and a subscription to Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine.
While we're waiting for Ellery to tell us something about next week's mystery, come on there, swing aboard our famous talking train.
Ride the headache, three ways.
Now, you couldn't ask for better advice than that. Fight headache three ways with Bromo Seltzer.
Fight the headache three ways.
Bromo Seltzer. And now, Ellery, let's hear about next week.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, next week we tell you a ghost story. Yes, a ghost story with a real ghost that seems immune to bullets. Don't miss next week, Adventure of the Family Ghost. Our guests will be Martha Scott and Mark Conley.
And don't forget the other great Bromo Seltzer show friends, Vox Pop, the show that travels America. Next Monday, Vox Pop takes you to the Winchester Repeating Arms Company at New Haven, Connecticut. Consult your local paper for the time and station.
The Adventures of Ellery Queen, pontooned to yesterday from the 20th of January, 1944, on NBC. And that does it for this hour of mystery, pontooned to yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden age. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Livonier. It's been a pleasure.